Welcome to Last Games Night on Earth, a podcast where we discuss if you were given just one last games night, what would you wish for? My name is James, and this is the Dungeons & Flagons podcast. Hey guys, quick edit just to say thanks for listening. This is the pilot episode, so any feedback is amazing. There's pretty bad audio in this recording from my side, but we've sorted that out, so hopefully it'll be better in the future. But we hope you still enjoy listening to it. So without further ado, here we go.
Are we going to go with Last Games Night on Earth?
I think so.
How are you?
I'm good. Another podcast for me to be part of, one of the many.
So, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself? What other podcasts are you doing?
Where else am I? I am mostly found in two places. So one is, I'll do the nerdy one first. One is Darker Days Radio, which is a horror-themed podcast where we talk about World of Darkness, Chronicles of Darkness, mainly themed RPGs. We look at other stuff as well. So we've done reviews of Aliens. We do Warhammer as well. We do a side called Darkhammer, where we examine the Warhammer RPGs. And then other things horror-related. We tell horror stories and shit at times, so that's kind of fun. My other podcast that I have just started, it is myself, called The Drunken Storyteller. It's where I drink and I tell stories of folklore, myths and legends from across the world. Not just European myths and legends. So I've looked at some Indian ones, I've looked at some Japanese ones. The next one, which I'm not sure when it's going to be, is going to have another Asian legend, but it's not going to be Japanese. And I'm not going to tell you what it is yet, but it involves vampires.
Oh, excellent. So like Asian-themed vampires.
Yeah, there's going to be an Asian-themed vampire, and there's going to be an angry dwarf vampire as well.
Well,
it's not your usual kind of folk story.
Didn't your last one have a dragon that ends up shitting on a village or something?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. The Dragon of Wantley is a classic kind of dragon, English dragon story that has some funny bits in it that I took liberties with, and basically the dragon dies and shits everywhere.
Should we do a podcast?
No.
Let's start off. So, you've just died. Congratulations. Got to the pearly gates and death has welcomed you and said you can have one thing, one wish you've asked for, your last games night on Earth. So let's start with the most important thing of any games night. Are we having snacks or are we having a full-on meal?
It's got to be snacks. A meal takes up too much space on the table. You've got to have, and is probably not going to last very long. If you're looking at an RPG for your last game, you've got quite a long time there to fill. So if you have snacks for the entire thing, I find a pizza to me counts as a snack because you can share it.
So I would count pizza as a meal. Okay.
We have sharing food. Does that count?
Like tapas.
Yeah, tapas, finger food, like party food.
That's fair. Yeah, sausage rolls.
But good quality, yeah, sausage rolls definitely. Good quality party food.
We went from serving nice tapas to sausage rolls very quickly then.
As I say, finger food, party food. We could have a nice buffet. Let's go for a buffet.
Are you paying for this?
Who said we got? I thought Death was paying for this. He gave us one last treat, so it's Death. Death's paying for it. Death, get your credit card out, please. I know you're well off.
Okay, so we're having a finger buffet. At What's It Dust?
Oh.
Yeah. So, right. Anyway, so snacks. We've got the snacks. It's a finger buffet. Quite a posh one, I've got to say. Yeah, I don't think I've been to a...
You're going to get those hot towels as well, so you can wipe your fingers so you're not going to get the game dirty.
Excellent. With a little slice of lemon.
Yeah.
Yeah, excellent. Okay, drinks. What about drinks? What are we serving? You've got to think about this carefully.
Yeah, I know I have, because this is a hard one.
Yeah, I think drinks is harder than snacks, because you have to think about
other people.
Are people going to... You want people to have a good time, but you also want... You don't want them to get too drunk. You know, you don't want to... Let's say you can have two drinks. One soft drink, one... the other one. Alcoholic. 10-10, I just forgot the word for alcoholic drinks.
That's good. You drink too much of the bar. So I think for the alcohol wise, because we want to savor the night and enjoy the night, not get absolutely smashed, it would have to be a nice kind of expensive bottle of scotch, maybe. Ooh. So you could have a sipping scotch.
This is a very decadent games night.
It's my last Games Night on Earth. I'm going to make it the best. I'm going to make it the Games Night that I've always wanted.
I'm not judging.
I'm never going to be able to afford this ever. So I might as well try and make it in my head.
So are you having a nice peaty scotch? Or
yeah, a nice peaty scotch.
Maybe like a Talisker? Talisker's a peaty one, isn't it?
Talisker's one of my top ones. The ones that I enjoy is like you've got Talisker, you've got Laphroaig, Jura. So these are like the big name scotches.
Laphroaig. Laphroaig is disgusting.
You're disgusting.
I've got a very funny anecdote that I'll tell you after the podcast about peat and the reason why I can't drink peat scotches. But it involves somebody pooing, so I'll leave that off the podcast.
Questions now. People all want to know.
So we've got snacks, we've got drinks. What about the location? Where are you having the games night? It's going to be anywhere in the world. It could be fantasy.
So it can be a fantasy setting as well. It doesn't actually have to be on the Earth. So this whole last games night on Earth.
Yeah.
Pointing holes in things.
I mean, you could have an RPG at the Mines of Moria on Balon's tomb. That was off the top of my head, and that sounds awesome.
That does, but I'm going to not do that. I would probably, because this is me, I'd probably have it maybe in the forests of Nikko in Japan, around some of the temples. Like, get rid of all the tourists and things. Make it proper spooky. And Nikko is a really, really peaceful temple complex just north of Tokyo in the forest, just about kind of like the base of some mountains. Proper Japanese woods and forest, like wooden temples. One of the temples has something called the Tears of the Dragon in it, where if you clap in the right place, it echoes and sounds like the dragon is crying, but only if you stand in a certain point.
Wow.
It's got carvings of the monkeys of the see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil in it.
Yeah, I think James May goes to it in his Japanese.
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
Excellent. No, that sounds cool. So is that because it's somewhere you've always wanted to go? Is somewhere that you've been to and miss and would like to go?
It's somewhere I have been to many, many times, and it is a really tranquil, calming place, and it's really nice. And playing some like fantasy games down there in this like really almost ethereal like setting would be really cool.
So are you setting up a table in the forest, or are you wanting it in one of the temples?
I think we'd have it in one of the temples.
In case it rains.
It does tend to kind of get a bit wet there.
Fair enough.
I don't want to ruin the games.
So we've got snacks, drinks, and location. It's all sounding very great. Although I am surprised that you didn't go for a Japanese whiskey.
They're hit and miss.
Some
are really, really good. Whereas most scotches, I'll drink a scotch. And I know those. Hibiki's a good Japanese whiskey if I have 60, 70, 80, 90, 100 quid to spare. But I don't. So. But then I'm not paying, am I? So death is for the unlimited credit card resources of death.
Although, do you think it'll be Discworld death? Because I doubt he would pay for it.
I doubt he would either. The death of rats might come up and go squeak at him.
Right. So should we talk about some board games?
Yes.
So what is your first board game?
So when you asked me this originally, I spent so long thinking about what the games, and you said I could have three max,
yeah.
So I tried to categorize the game.
Def gets impatient after three games.
I get impatient. I tried to kind of categorize the things that I like, the type of games that I like to play, and how I could kind of amalgamate everything that I like in board games into three separate games. And so the first game that I chose was Carcassonne.
Okay.
Probably, if you'll allow it, the Carcassonne big box, because it comes with all the expansions.
Your game, nice.
So rather than just like the one small box with just the base game, but with all the expansions for the replayability of it. It's a game that I can...
And it is your last game tonight, so I don't think you need to think about the replayability too much.
True. Okay, yeah, one night, yeah, just Carcassonne then.
You can take the big box if you want.
I'll take the box that I've got, which is Carcassonne with two expansions in it, and I can't remember what they are. It's got the river. That's it, the river.
That's the expansion that's now included in the base game, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. The rivers and the priesty people, whatever they're called, the bishops or whatever it is. Yeah, just that one. It is a game that I will always play, and I always enjoy playing, especially because you can make penis castles.
What about the game is it that you like so much?
It's rules-wise, it's really, really simple. You pick a card and you place a card. So there's no complexity within the base system of the rules.
And obviously you're scoring as you go along, aren't you, both the tiles that you
play. It's a European-style game, so you've got a track that you score around, and you get points for completing castles, for completing road systems. You've got a thing in there called the farmer, whereas if you kind of create the biggest area of open land or something. And so there's different ways to score about it.
So am I right? It's been a while since I've played Carcassonne. Is it one of those games where you can do one action on your turn, or you could play it out, or you can place down the meeples, can't you, to claim areas?
Yes, you can play it out and place them. That's the only two things you can do, and that's the only two things you need to do in a.
So it's a. I mean, it's a classic for a reason. It'll definitely ease people into a good night's gaming. I think it's a good choice.
Yeah, it works with all levels. So as I say, it's really simple rules, but the tactics behind it are massive, because you can't lay your meeple on a piece that connects to your opponent's meeple.
Yeah.
So if someone started building a castle, you can't move into that by placing a piece onto it. You have to build a castle next to it and then connect the two up. And so you kind of end up with tactics and stuff like that, and with it involved within such a simple idea.
Even people that I know who would say they don't like it, it's mostly because they've overplayed it.
Mm.
And really, if you kind of said, I would like to play Carcassonne, most people would.
Yeah. It's non-offensive, it's simple. And it's easy to play.
Yeah, it's a good choice. Good choice. Most important question, what colour are you playing?
I've got to remember what colours there are now in me. It's red, blue, green, yellow.
Do you not have a meeple colour that you always go for?
Well, because I usually play with certain people, and those certain people have the same colour preferences as me, I always kind of get left last and just kind of... I'm nice and I just take whatever's left usually. If I could choose my own meeple colour, it would probably be red. Even though there is black in there, I just like, if you know me, that's black. But I usually go for red, I think.
Oh, cool. I usually go for red as well. That's my favorite color. All right. So we've got people eased in with the easy casual game. What game are you bringing out next?
So I've eased people in. I'm not going to hit them with the big hard one. Then I will go for the second game. This is something that I was trying to think of an RPG for this that is something that I enjoy playing, but is also really easy to get other people involved in and not too kind of beyond and some of the weird places that I go with my RPGs. So I went with my classic in a way. If you know me, it's not going to be D&D and it's not going to be Pathfinder. I despise those games, so I'm sorry, everybody. It's Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay.
Oh, cool. A world that I am completely oblivious to. Anything to do with Warhammer, I know very little about. So you're going to have to explain this one to me and the listeners. Anyone who knows me knows that I know very little about Warhammer. Mostly because me and my friends, when we were younger, went into the local games workshop. Within 2 minutes of being in there, we're told, are you going to buy anything? If not, leave. We had a very bad first experience with
Customer service there.
Yeah, we were like, I think we were like 12 or 13. There was only three of us. We were literally just looking at the models. We weren't doing anything bad. And yeah, we were told if we weren't buying anything, leave. We were going to buy something as well. But after that, we were just like, oh, screw you guys. Going to go and play Beyblade.
Screw you guys. I'm going home. But then you did pick up, what is it? Middle-earth Battles. Yeah,
that was later. And that was more to do with the fact that I could go to the newsagents and get the magazine rather than having to go into Games Workshop and being a massive Lord of the Rings fan.
That's fair enough.
We had some great times playing that. I had like a Helm's Deep model, which I still have. You've seen. It's great.
Yes, I have seen it.
But we're talking about my games here. It's your games now. So tell us about...
So Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay. It's a fantasy setting. Surprise, surprise. It's in the name. I won't go so much into the rules, but it's a D100 percentile system. So you just score lower than your value, and there's success levels and all sorts of stuff. It's not a difficult game to pick up. It's quite simple. But world-wise, it kind of comes from the game that you were just talking about, actually, Lord of the Rings. So when Warhammer Fantasy was kind of created in the late 70s, early 80s, it came from the designer's kind of love for Lord of the Rings and that kind of fantasy. And it's set in a medieval, between like the 12th to 15th century Europe. So it's very... The Empire, which is kind of like the main human settlement version, is very Germanic. It's very Teutonic in its look and its outlook.
Quite Tolkien-esque.
Yeah, it is very. There are some very Tolkien-esque parts of it. It's got orcs, it's got goblins, it's got dwarves, it's got your northern Viking kind of raider people. It's got French Bretonians. Mm. Bretonians like.
So I love Tolkien-esque fantasy. So like, I don't see it as like a bad thing for something to be Tolkien
It takes its roots from Tolkien. Take the roots of that and then lower your expectations right down into the gutter.
Odd way to sell a game.
I have described it, and I know on Darker Days Radio we have described it quite regularly as gutter punk, as a kind of idea. You can literally play the poorest person in the empire within it. You can play a peasant in it, and your desire as a peasant can be to earn enough money to buy a pig. So we actually I'm doing a live play over every other Sunday for a company called Gehenna Gaming, who are an American version kind of Darker Days Radio. One of our characters is a peasant. He rolled the lowest character class he could roll, and he plays the poorest peasant in the world, and he's looking to buy a pig. That's his entire dream and his entire goal as a character is to buy a pig.
Is he enjoying that?
He is absolutely loving it. He's like Chig, the guy who's doing it, is one of the most insanely mentally good role players I've ever seen.
I suppose that is one of the reasons why people play role playing games, is that it lets you live out your fantasies.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I've always fantasized about buying a pig.
Well, there you go. I'll get you in. You could also play a rat catcher and have a scratchy little dog. It actually comes as one of your items. You get a yappy little dog.
I do like a yappy little dog.
And the dog is like the best thing about the entire character. So it gives you the options to kind of play these lowly-esque characters. But then it does go up and you can play some really powerful characters. Like one of the other characters that got rolled up in that game was a high elf bounty hunter who was literally somehow turned out to be the tank.
Oh.
Well, we don't know how, because high elves are meant to be like the people you touch and they die. You just got to touch them first. But this person was just like, yeah, no, you can't touch me. Well, you can touch me, but I'm just not going to take any wounds. And then I'm going to shoot you in the face with a bow from 6 million miles away and still succeed. And then there's this pig farmer trying to work out how to say his own name. they had an interesting relationship, shall we say.
I just like the idea of this, that you, like you say, the high elf trying to aspire to a great adventure whilst dragging along a mate who's just like, can we go over there and look at the pigs?
Yeah, that's pretty much what happened. If you're interested, you can actually find the first two episodes of this on YouTube. So you can actually see some of the comedy of how that happens.
Oh, it sounds like a great game.
Yeah, it is. It's a fantastic game. It's a fantastic system. It's a fantastic world where you can play the high fantasy. So if you want something like D&D-esque, you can take that kind of story line. But the best thing about Warhammer Fantasy is, as well, it starts off with its tongue in its cheek. It is always going to have a slight element of comedy within it because that's how it's written. The whole thing of Monty Python running around with the guy with this horse clapping with the coconuts.
Mm.
That's Warhammer Fantasy. We start off like that. So that typical idea of a D&D thing, you start off as noble warriors and then turn into a bunch of ragtag lunatics. No, you start off as a bunch of ragtag lunatics and then get worse.
What's your third game?
Okay, so we started off nice and simple, get people into the games. We then went a bit funny and comedic and kind of went a bit deeper with the rules into Warhammer Fantasy and exploring and storytelling. And to end things off, because at the end of the night, we know we're obviously going to die. We are going to enter, probably not in my case, but in most people's cases, the pearly gates. And good things will happen. Death will just look at me and then point downwards and I'll just fall. So to kind of get us into the mood of that, the fact that we're going to die, I've chosen probably my most favorite and most expensive board game I have ever purchased. A game called Kingdom Death Monster.
Ending the night on something nice and light.
Oh yes, very light.
So I've got to ask, when your guests arrive, are you going to have this on the table or are you going to have it hidden somewhere to pull out at the end of the night and spring on your guests and say, this is my night, we're playing it?
Well, considering how long it takes to set up, I'm probably going to have to say we might have to have it already set up.
How long does it take? I've never played it. How long does it take?
It has a couple of different phases within the game, so it kind of, you have to do a lot of setup in between different bits. But to play, so Kingdom Death Monster is actually, it's a story, kind of has a story that flows through it. And if you want to play the full thing, you're looking at a good 60, 70 hours worth of gameplay. But you just take what we call one lantern year. So one adventure within it, we play that. And depending upon the monster you want to go hunt, that can, and what level your characters are at, that can take an hour or it can take 5 hours.
Right.
So it all depends on how you choose it. I think if it was my last ever game that I was going to play, I would choose to have one of the later Lantern Years in it, and I'd fight the Dragon King, which is his big ass dragon thing. Just because
one of the things I do know about Kingdom Death Monster is the minis aren't really minis, but they look fantastic.
Yeah, it's so like most mini games, you look at kind of probably 28 mil minis. So Games Workshop, their scale is 28 millimeter. Although they've actually now moved into something called 28 millimeter heroic, which is effectively 32 mil scale. So, but there's all different scales. So a normal human from foot to eye level would be about 25 millimeters tall. This game works out at 32 millimeters. So a human is foot to eye, 32 millimeters tall. And so they are quite big, some of these characters. And then the monsters that you hunt are big. Like the dragon model that I've got for it, the Dragon King, he's probably about 12 inches tall and 12 inches across. If he was to put his wings out like flat rather than how he's got it, he's more of a wyvern, but if you put his wings out, he'd probably be looking about 2 foot across. It's absolutely immense.
They are beautiful models. Obviously, you're a painter, aren't you? So you must know.
Yes. I have painted some of them. Well, yeah, no, they're all grey plastic at the moment.
I don't think anybody expected you to suddenly announce that you'd painted all of them. I don't think anybody's painted all of the models from the games that they own.
No, and if they say they have, they're lying. I call you out on that shit right now, boys.
All right, yeah. So Kingdom Death Monster. So why have you picked it? Is it for sentimental value? Is it something to you, or is it because it's just a game that you love playing over and over again? Or is it because it's a game that you can never get people to play with you, but you can guilt them into playing it because it's the last games night on Earth?
Weirdly, it's actually one of the games I do get people to play with me. I've got so many other games that people won't play with me. Like the other game that I nearly picked for this, I've just started the solo campaign for, is a game called Tainted Grail Avalon, Fall of Avalon. But it's a really cool, dark storytelling game. Nearly picked that. Won't go into it, so I won't. But I can't get people to play that with me. Kingdom Death Monster, I do get people to play it with me.
Is it the same people playing the campaign, or is it different people?
It's the same people I've had playing in the campaign. So we have played, I think, about 10 Lantern Years now, so 10 games of it. We've had a lot of fun with it. We the last game we played just before lockdown, we decided to fight a new creature, a new monster in it. And this is one of the reasons why I love the game, is most games you play, you're expected to win. Like some RPGs, you know your character will die at some point, and you kind of then plan for that aspect of it and move on from that. But you expect it, your character to quite often survive, but at the very kind of last leg of the thing, like, or they'll get healed by a healer. Kingdom Death Monster, no. It will kill you. It will straight out kill you. And so we fought something that was way what we thought was at our level, and we had a lot of really good equipment and really good abilities attached to our characters.
You get attached to the characters that you played in the same way that you get attached to your role-playing game characters.
Well, you're not meant to. this was the problem. We got attached to some of the characters because they had gained some really cool abilities. And so we thought, right, we'll test out this new creature, this new monster. We'll put in our good fighters because we need to kill it to see what it's like. Within about 15 minutes of starting what's called the hunt, we had lost two characters dead. It had just killed them. And the last two that we had left were, I think they were armed with bows, and the bows just weren't strong enough to penetrate its armor. So we couldn't actually attack it. We couldn't kill it. And so they died within about another 15 minutes. So we had a total party wipe within half an hour. We'd lost four of our characters. You build up a village of characters. So it's not just you have a set number of characters. But yeah, we got absolutely annihilated. But I like that. I'd kind of like that. It's like it teaches you have to think of us as a society that you're building rather than as individual characters that you're trying to build up.
It's definitely one of the games that I would use to explain to people just how far board games have grown. You know, you're not talking about Colonel Mustard with a rope in the living room. You know, you're talking about really in-depth stuff.
Yeah. With this game as well, it is very much an adult game. It is not a game that I would ever recommend to children. Two reasons for that. One, it's very, very adult. It's very, very grown up. It deals with some very, very grown up themes. But also, it's for a base game box, it's £400. So
yes.
Kids ain't going to have that much money. But yeah, as you're saying, like, when I found out about this game, it's like, this is something I've never experienced, even like with my wargaming stuff that I do, like the Games Workshop stuff and things. It's so far beyond any expectations of what you'd get.
I don't know if this is a bit of a stupid question to ask somebody who I know is into miniatures and paints them very, very well, by the way. Like, I'm always in awe of your miniatures. But
it's all good camera work.
If you could knock a couple of hundred off the game and get cardboard standees instead of miniatures, would you still like it as much?
That's a hard one.
That's what she said.
But I'm probably going to say, if they were good quality card cuts and the option was there was an option to buy the minis, then yes, I would. If there was no minis at all, then probably not, because it adds a lot to the atmosphere.
Because I know we've played it together, you know, the game Farsight?
Yes.
Because that obviously it has the base game, which is like cardboard cutouts, but then it has the option to buy the war chest, which is the minis, which are lovely minis. It means that you can buy the game and experience the game for £50, but if you want the minis, you can spring another £50 and get the £100 game.
No, you are right. So I know what you're saying, because the game I was just talking about earlier, Tainted Grail, it comes with minimal models, and I would still play this game without those models on there, but there's also then an optional buying which gets you even more models. I have that. They're still sat in the box, and I've not taken them out. So I'm playing it without these extra minis. And I think you could quite easily play this game with...
I wonder if more games should just have the option of you can play the game miniless, or you can pay for the minis.
Yeah. I think Kingdom Death, there are some games that I do think really benefit from it, and some games that don't really need
it. Don't get me wrong. Minis are cool, aren't they? But some... to the price tag of some games so much that sometimes you think it would be just as good game with cardboard standees. Like, for instance, Dead of Winter. Like, that's just got cardboard standees. And that game is still good. It's not ruined because it hasn't got minis. But if you were to add that many minis, like if it was a Come On game, for instance, you know, a Zombicide game, you know,
minis.
It would add 30, 40 quid to that game. Like,
you could play Zombicide with cardboard cutouts so easily.
Yeah. I feel like Zombicide would be a really good game for it to be, you know, you get it with the cardboard standees with the option to buy minis. Because there are some people who love buying that game to get the minis, paint them, and that's fine.
Yeah. I have one of the Zombicides. I don't know which one. Black Plague, I think.
You've got Black Plague because I've got it.
Yeah. The minis are really cool. They're really well designed, but they're board game minis, so I'm never going to paint them to the quality that they need to be to show off how good they are. So I think
there is like 15 of the same mini.
Yeah. So there's a lot of play, I think, within board games to kind of the quality of what you get. Kingdom Death is literally top tier level kind of gaming models. They are multi-part plastic modeling models. They are not CMON stuff. They are not single post minis out there that you have to have some skill to build them, and there are weapon options and all sorts within there. So it's very much, it's an amalgamation of wargaming and tabletop board gaming. Then you've got, as you say, CMON stuff where you've got single pose models. The quality of their miniatures is absolutely phenomenal. It's really, really good. And then you've got games like Farsight. The idea behind the models is cool, but because they've kept that price point low, it brings in a different level. And I would probably paint the Farsight models because I know they're going to be used a lot on a table, and I'd probably enjoy painting them because they're kind of cool and there's lots of flat surfaces and you can have some fun with it. But the Zombicide stuff, I'm just never going to do because they're too good, I think, for a board game. So I think if you're looking at models for a board game, don't, unless you're going for that real top tier nerd enthusiast, don't make the model so good. You'll reduce the price again, but it's
for the case of this podcast, obviously, past 10 minutes is irrelevant because we're not paying for it. Death is.
Yes, death is. I have the base game, and I have a crap ton of expansions for it. Base game, really expensive. Expansions, just as expensive. I'm not going to lie. I probably put nearly a grand into the game.
Jesus. I mean, well, I'm glad that you can say that you play it.
Yeah, I do play it and I love it. And I even like having the models out on display. So they are just beautiful, dark fantasy weirdness. So
I do love a game that you have to spend 15 minutes justifying owning.
I've had to spend quite a long time justifying this game because of it. It's the price point on the game that I have to spend a lot of time justifying. But then you get it out and you play it.
You have to remember that you're not just paying for the component prices. You're paying for, you know, the amount, the time that people, the designers, you know, you're paying for people to make the game what it is. So if a game just it is more than just pretty models, it's also a game that works really well and is really thought out. You're also, you know, you're always going to be willing to pay a bit more because you're paying for people's time. Yeah.
Like the guy who designed the game, Chris Poots, it's a one-man project, effectively, Kingdom Death, and it is his passion project. He won't release anything unless it's, in his eyes, perfect. So the last Kickstarter he ran for Edition 1.5 was, when it ran, was the most successful board game Kickstarter out there, hitting, like, I think, nearly $10 million. There's now some games out there which have beaten that, like Frosthaven, but we will not get into my hatred of that world. But he's still not shipped Wave 2 yet, because he is still looking at ways to make the game the perfect game that he wants it to be. Whereas you see people churning out games, and then 6 months later, a year later, there's Edition 1.5, there's Edition 2, then there's third edition, fourth edition.
There's nothing worse than being told, this game is really good, but you need this expansion for it to work well. So we've talked about games, we've talked about location, we've talked about snacks and drinks. Next up, most important, do you think? Who are you inviting to your last games night on Earth?
Most important, because you can't play games without people.
This is definitely the thing that we are learning about the hobby during lockdown, is the fact that tabletop gaming is, it's about gathering around a table and looking people in the eyes, and that is what I'm missing the most at the minute.
Yeah, very much so. It's like, I run a couple of things online for various things, and we were talking about this before we started recording, actually. We're saying, like, RPGs work really, really well to run online, but it depends on how they're run. So me and James are both of kind of the idea that we want to run it with videos, because you get a lot more interaction. You can see when someone wants to talk. You can kind of do crazy faces and gestures, and it feels a lot more natural. Whereas if you're on a Discord server with no video capabilities and everyone's just a faceless entity, people start talking over each other and you lose a lot of the interaction. So yeah, I just find
it a bit more awkward when I am trying to, you know, get into character in role-playing games. I don't know what it is. It might just be me. But I find it a lot less awkward if I'm in a room knowing that people are enjoying my performance and are doing it as well. Whereas online, when you're just staring at nothing, maybe it's just me, but I just feel like I try and put on a good performance. And I just feel like everybody else could just be laughing at me, but they've muted the mics. It might just be me, but
we laugh at you, James, even if you're in person. No, I completely get it. It's like, you can feed off each other's energy when you're in the same room, can't you?
So yeah.
Like an epic fight scene. Now, I find one of the best things to run when you're within a group of people is not those epic fight scenes, actually. It's the comedy bar scenes where people are just sat around and having to have social, awkward interactions with the bar staff. Like, not starting fights or anything, but just trying to order food in a bar that they've never been to, or trying to question people in a bar about things, and you're just watching them as they just, like, I don't know what to ask this person, but I know I need to ask them something. And the person is like, "Wait, mate, how's it going? What are you up to? Yeah, come down here, have a drink with me." And she's just like, "I don't know." And
like, that sounds like the majority of my shifts at the Flower. the Flower is the pub that I work in.
So guess when I was thinking about this, and you said like alive or dead, I just thought about normal people. And then you said fantasy, and then my mind just kind of melted. So there are a few real people that I would love to have in a gaming situation. One of them, well, I'm going to pick two real people, and then I'm probably going to go a bit fantasy and a bit sideways. So the two real people, one is still alive, one is Bill Bailey.
Excellent choice, yes. Oh.
Could you imagine him playing in an RPG? with the amount of him playing a bard in D&D or something.
Oh, yes. I can, as soon as you said that, that is exactly what I pictured, sitting around a game table playing D&D with Bill Bailey and him whacking out a ukulele.
Yeah, he's like, you go, right, I'm now going to do this bard thing. And he just pulls out an instrument and starts actually doing the bard thing. And he's like,
I wonder if he plays D&D. He must play D&D.
He must play D&D. He's like, I've seen him live a few times, and there are always certain slightly nerdy comments that he makes within shows and stuff.
Yeah, yeah. That's an amazing first guest.
So I'd have him there, and I'd like getting him to play Warhammer Fantasy. I think he would absolutely love it. I think he'd love Kingdom Death Monster as well, because he does have that dark side to him, and he is a metalhead.
Yeah.
Just go to his Enter Sandman on the horns.
Do you think he's bored during lockdown? Because all of a sudden, he's started turning up on a lot of different programs. in the past, like, 4 months, he's been in more programs than I've seen him in the past, like, 3 years. It's welcome, because he's hilarious.
Yeah, no, I think he's one of these people who just, he can't sit still. He needs to be doing stuff.
Yeah. Anyway, so, Bill Bailey, who else are you inviting?
So, my second guest is, it's a celebrity. It is, unfortunately, a celebrity who has passed away. But it is certainly a celebrity I know who was a bit of a gamer. Robin Williams. Yes, not Robbie Williams. No, not the Take That guy. No.
I was going to say, last I checked, he was alive. Robin Williams.
The comedy styling genius that is Robin Williams.
Mm.
Just
again, because... you've really, so far, you've knocked it out of the park, because he was really famous for his improvisations.
Yeah.
I know the famous scene in Friends with him and, I can't remember the other actor's name. And apparently the whole scene is really funny. And apparently it was completely improvised.
The whole, I can't remember the name of the movie, but where he's the doctor and he goes and visits the kids.
Patch Adams.
A lot of that movie is apparently ad-libbed. And the way that he makes the kids laugh, and it was all his ideas off the cuff and stuff. And even his more serious stuff, like Good Morning Vietnam, that was an ad that then got put into the movie because it just worked so well. You need to have the ability to do comedy and do serious, like, role-playing, as much as quite often it does turn into, within like the main kind of fantasy games out there and the big names that are out there, so Star Wars, Warhammer, D&D, Pathfinder, Shadowrun, some of these big companies, they do generally turn into a bit of a murder hobo fest, but there are other games out there that are a lot more serious. And even within these kind of murder hobo fests, you do have scenes which are, in a way, more intimate and more serious. So being able to remove the comedy at the right points. And yeah. Robin Williams, I think he can read a scene so well and bring so much depth within whatever he does. Like his early stuff with Mork and Mindy, all the way up to his later stuff. Even the, I'm going to say it, the one where he plays a robot. Not a good movie for me. But then you've got Mrs. Doubtfire in there. You've got, say, Good Morning Vietnam, Dead Poets Society. Ugh. Brings a tear to my face just thinking about Dead Poets Society. Just throwing him into a role-play game would be phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I can imagine his joy at something as simple as Carcassonne as well. Mm. I think he would find joy in any
game. Not just that, I think he would help other people find joy.
Yeah, very much so. I think that's kind of what he would... He had the ability to bring that joy to people, even if, unfortunately, he couldn't bring it to himself. Within this being the last night on Earth, it would be something we could all just kind of throw ourselves into and bring that joy out of everybody. And I think he would definitely bring the comedy and bring the impersonations and just general, actually probably really in-depth insights into a lot of stuff as well. And him and Bill Bailey together.
I would love to see that. Them two in the same room would be amazing. So your third guest. Said you were going fantasy for this one.
Well, yeah, I've got so many bloody things in my mind as to what to choose. What can we have? Just for pure comedy, I'm going to go back down the Warhammer route here again, I think. Now, I had two choices. I've got two choices because there's two main game, for those of you who don't know the Games Workshop systems, there's two main game lines. There's Warhammer 40,000, which is a sci-fi game, and there's Age of Sigmar, which is a fantasy game. I think I might have to go for one of the characters out of War. In fact, I'm gonna two people from this, I think, just for the pure comedy of this. I think I'm going to take Age of Sigmar, and I'm going to take the God Emperor Sigmar from this.
Okay.
And it's basically,
before you explain why, do you think that the God Sigmar would be happy with lobster tail on cocktail sticks
in Age of Sigmar, in the modern version of Age of Sigmar? Yes, definitely. There's a little bit of comedy behind him nowadays, I think.
Oh, right, okay.
Taking him from Warhammer Fantasy or the early days of Age of Sigmar, then no, he would probably throw a hissy fit and then throw lightning bolts.
I just really like the idea of you trying to feed a god a sausage roll.
You see, my other choice at this point was going to be the Emperor from Warhammer 40,000, the God Emperor of Warhammer 40,000, who's technically a corpse on a throne and is not alive, but you can take him from like 10,000 years before where he's a real person, or you could have his rotting corpse sat at the table. But no, I'm going to choose the God Emperor of Mankind, the God Emperor Sigmar from Age of Sigmar. And I'm definitely going to feed him cheese squares on cocktail sticks. And shrimp cocktails and all the proper little crappy finger food stuff.
Excellent.
And there's basically that's why I've chosen him, because I think it would be funny as hell to have like this man in massive shiny gold armor is literally a god of an entire universe and feed him food on cocktail sticks. The kind of comedy line that's going along in the moment with Age of Sigmar is because he's the god of the good side. There's no real good side, but the god of the good side. When anything
in your quotations and good
in
side
the quotation there. Marks. Yes, I'm trying to. We're on a video call here. And I'm quotation marks. Whenever something doesn't go his way in the universe, and like some bad guy throws some new shit at him, what he hit, there's a meme that goes around, which is basically, "Can I open a new Stormcast chamber? Yes, I can." And he just opens up a new chamber that creates this new set of really amazing golden warriors. It's like, I'm losing. I do not like this. More people to fight for me who you've never heard of before but have just come into the universe. So it's like the God Emperor version of a table flip. Throws his armies at people.
Just whilst you were doing that then, I've got this vision of the God Sigmar doing a table flip, throwing a hissy fit over Carcassonne, and Robin Williams just turning to him with a red nose on.
Bill Bailey playing Enter Sandman on the horns behind him.
Brilliant. So you've got three guests plus you. That's four. Are you leaving it there, or?
I think to run Carcassonne works with four. Kingdom Death, you can only have a maximum of four. But I think we'd throw one. I want to throw one more. And this is one for the Warhammer nerds out there. Just because, again, I think it would be funny.
Okay, one person's going to have to sit out of Kingdom Death. Who's going to sit out?
One that I'm about to choose now. Oh no! I'm now debating myself as to whether I want that one or another one. Oh, there's too many people. So I'm going to go. I'm going to go with a Warhammer 40k one now, just for the fun of it. And then go for a big-ass orc called Gazgul Thraker, who is like the biggest, baddest orc who walks around in power armor and just rips people apart. Fights because he likes to fight, and he's the best fighter in the universe. He has a massive fucking claw, and he comes with a little friend who is a little, in the universe, it's called a Grot, is like a two-foot-tall gremlin, I suppose, who runs around carrying his banner.
So how's Gaz going to deal with the cocktail sausages?
He would probably just eat the table.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, I would love to see him try to headbutt Sigmar. Sigmar would table flip and Gazgul would then headbutt him, and then Robin Williams would squeak his nose.
I feel like you've just invited two people because you want to see them fight.
We'll remove Gazgul and we'll just leave it at the Emperor, because I just kind of... But the problem is there are so many people that would make... Because you open it up to the world of fantasy. There are so people out there that I would love to see at the table. Like Tom Bombadil would be fun, but then it'd be 7 million years of him just talking. I think I'll just sit with Robin Williams, Bill Bailey, and the Emperor Sigmar, God Sigmar.
To me, that's a cracking game tonight. But what is your random special item?
Now I've chosen these three. I don't know if it works. Remembering Bill, because Bill Bailey's there. Is he bringing his own instruments, or do I have to provide him with the instruments?
I think he would bring his own.
Damn it. I would probably like buy the smallest violin in the world and give it to Sigma, because I want to see this like 12-foot-tall god in shining armor try to play the violin. And then watch Bill Bailey just pick it off him and then just go, this is how you do it. And just like play the most epic thing that you've ever seen in the world. And then a god will flip a table again.
That was excellent. Thank you, David. So snacks, a very posh finger buffet. Drinks, excellent Scotch whiskey. Location, Forest of Nico. Games, it was Carcassonne, Kingdom Death Monster, Warhammer Fantasy RP. Guests was Bill Bailey, Robin Williams, and the god Sigmar. And your random special item was...
the smallest violin in the world, so we can make the god Sigmar play a violin. And then Bill Bailey just own his ass on it.
Pick one, A, B, C, D.
D, because my name begins with D.
Okay, so D is the nerdy question.
Oh, crap.
So the nerdy question this week is, what is the name of the main character of Atwood's A Handmaid's Tale?
You said he was nerdy, not intelligent. I've not seen The Handmaid's Tale, and I'm really, really sorry that I've not...
It's a book.
I know it's a book. I've not read the book either.
Off-read.
And I'm going to make you all forget about it by promoting myself.
Plug away, sir.
So I'm going to plug all the things in the world. Plug my own podcast, which is The Drunken Storyteller, where I drink and tell stories of folk legends and mythology. I am also part of the Darker Days radio crew, where we do themed RPG content. We try to release every couple of weeks. I am running a live stream of the Warhammer Fantasy RP game that I was talking about earlier over at Gehenna Gaming on Twitch every 2 weeks on a Sunday. The first two episodes of that are already on YouTube, so if you want to kind of get an idea of how works and the game system and the character gen, we're on there. And also the last thing that I want to promote is at the end of February, the 19th, 20th and 21st, I think it is, that weekend, Gehenna Gaming are doing Virtual HorrorCon, which is an online convention all based around horror themed RPGs. There will be live plays, there will be panels, and there'll be games that you can sign up to kind of take part in the games. A lot of those games will be run by the writers and developers from horror RPGs, so there'll be a lot of people from Onyx Path Publishing there. Myself and a lot of the people from Darker Days Radio will be there. All the guys from Gehenna Gaming will be there. The Primogen, who runs a lot of World of Darkness stuff, is going to be there. And there's going to be loads of people from the horror gaming community running games and being on panels. I'm not sure what I'm doing yet. I'm going to be running some games. I know that for certain. I don't know where they're going to be and what they're going to be, but there'll be Vessen, which is a really cool Nordic horror RPG based in 19th century. Technically Sweden, but my game's not going to be Sweden. I'll be running Warhammer Fantasy RP, and I'm also going to be running a game of Chronicles of Darkness, a new scenario that I will have written that is going to be published through Drive-Thru RPG soon.
Oh, that sounds amazing.
I'm literally everywhere. I'm a shameless publicity whore.
All right. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening. This has been the pilot episode of Last Games Night on Earth. I've been James. Our guest this week has been David.
Oi, oi.
See you next week, I guess.
See you later.
How do we stop this?
You type Craig Leave.